Trendy Topics.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back
to Do You Like Us Podcast.
Yes, Do You Like Us and Other Codependent Topics.
Mm-hmm. Where we talk about all things mental health and how it intersects with codependency.
I'm your co-host, Brooke.
And I'm the other co-host, Megan.
And I am...
excited to be here.
Yes.
Me too.
I feel like we start off a lot of episodes that way, but it really is the truth.
It's true, because we love doing it. We love chatting with you. We love chatting with each other.
Yes.
And we'd be talking about this anyway, so why not record it?
Exactly. And it's been a little bit of a break since we've recorded some episodes, because we had a lot in the pipeline for quite a few weeks.
In the bank.
Yeah, because we're awesome like that, and we pre-recorded a bunch, so this is our first time getting back together to record. We've been hanging out a ton, but I mean, we're...
actual recording.
Yeah,
we're... so if we seem stuffy, don't tell us. We don't want to know.
We don't want your feedback. But actually, we do, and...
actually, email us at doyoulikeuspod@gmail.com and give us exactly that, feedback.
Feedback.
Give us questions. Tell us how it's going. Whatever you want to say, really.
I know, and you might... we would like to hear what you guys think of the pod so far. We've had a bunch of awesome guests so far that have... taught Megan and I a bunch.
Free therapy, for sure.
Yeah, that's what's hilarious about this, is literally, it's like, wow, this we aren't having to pay for this at all.
I know, it's nuts. I'm really honored that all these people are coming on. We've had the best time. Everyone's been so gracious with their time and information, and really nice, and lived up to their name with the information that they had, and their, attitudes about it, so it's been fun.
A lot of them had said this was their first pod interview they've ever done.
Nuts.
So
they were all fabulous.
You wouldn't even tell. Mm-mm. And they honestly, they've been knocking it out the park, and we've been giving them some, I would say, some tough questions as well. Especially, I don't know, I just think the questions that we formulate and give them ahead of time is not easy, like lob in the park, you know, with sports
numbers. And we just shoot from the hip and give them questions when we think of them too, like not even the planned ones.
Yeah.
And I appreciate they're always game to answer those.
Me too. And today we're gonna discuss Joe's interview, which was super awesome. She's got amazing hair, by the way.
I know.
The fact that she's able to do so many colors with that amount of hair is so amazing. That doesn't mean that in any way. I just mean she's got short hair. So it's like,
she fits them all in though.
She does.
And it looks great.
Yeah.
I know.
And she was just so fun to talk to.
So fun.
She was just such a chill interview from the start. We both knew we weren't going to have to, like, I don't know.
Be on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And her, even just her, her demeanor and the way that she is, it's very just calm and relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. She's very funny, and I love that that's a lot of the way that she conveys her information is through that kind of dry humor and some puns, and, you know?
Yeah.
It's really refreshing.
You could tell she'd be really fun to hang out with, just hanging out in general. Like, and I was even thinking, I was like, I wish we had the money to go to Australia and visit her, because I totally would.
Totally. I would make her hang out with me. Yeah. She's an Aussie.
She's an Aussie, and it was interesting to navigate the time difference when we were doing that interview. Because, totally.
It's so funny how that blows your mind, where you're like, it's tomorrow for you in the afternoon?
I know. We made a few comments about that in the beginning, and then she didn't seem impressed by that. She was like,
guys. Well, if you don't know her, she's my favorite Jo, but because she's an Aussie, there's a U in that favorite.
Yeah.
And she's on Instagram, TikTok. I don't know where else.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you randomly found her on Instagram and just liked her content. Was like, hey, check her out. And I was like, oh, super cool.
Yeah, and she is on, her content is all about changing the way that we view neurodivergence. Yeah. She uses the term neurosparkly to make it less clinical and less negative. We were talking about how the word neurodivergence is inherently like othering, you know,
right,
and clinical, and like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And neurotypical people never get labeled neurotypical. No one is saying that to you, you know? Right. So, sure, there is an opposite word for people who are neurotypical, but no one is saying that to you as in, ooh, listen up, I need to tell you this, I need to tell you all about your symptoms, you know?
Right.
And hearing that all of your life and getting bombarded with all these things that you should be and you're not, she's trying to change the face of that and switch it up and say, look, there are positive consequences to this as well. Like, right. Just because people are not fitting into the way that the system was built doesn't mean they're inherently less than.
Exactly.
You know,
just because the system was built by neurotypicals mm-hmm. doesn't mean we all have to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the positive spin she does on these things, because honestly, that's what you always hear, the negative aspect of these things. And it's like, oh, you know, ADHD kids or autistic kids just can't sit still in class, or, you know, you just always hear the negative stigmas that aren't always true or correct, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, it's a whole different way of viewing the world. So I like the fact that she talked about that, and the fact that she also mentioned that in Australia, they don't have much of a stigma on these things.
I know.
Which is pretty crazy. It's
interesting. I mean, she was like, you know, of course, you're hearing the bad things, you're being corrected all of your life, sit still, why are you climbing the tree, why are you doing this, why are you doing that? But that, in general, as a person with ADHD, it doesn't really have to be announced, it's not embarrassing, it's not weird, it's not as big of a negative stigma as yeah. we have here in America. And we were just talking about why, and she was like, I don't know, I just yeah. don't know where that's coming from.
She was like, it's just the quirky kid. And that's how she was referred to growing up, as I was just the quirky kid.
Right.
And I like that. It's like, we all knew a quirky kid growing up, you know, but it's like in the U.S., it's like, especially now with the amount of labels we do, it's like immediately we're just mm-hmm. slapping on what seems to be a negative
mm-hmm.
label, you know. And she's yeah. like, no, it's just you're a quirky kid. And that's kind of how Australia does it. And I thought that was cool.
Absolutely. I don't know why we can't adopt that. I mean, oftentimes, you know, people will come in my office and parents really don't want to hear anybody mention these words like ADHD, autism. And usually, you know, it's a hard conversation to have because you want to make space for their grief and understand that they had a vision and an expectation that maybe is being changed in this moment,
yeah.
Which is hard, but at the same time, just bringing them back to the fact that your kid is still your kid. This is the same kid that you walked in with, that you were eating dinner with last night.
Right.
This is just your kid. You just love your kid, you know, and with any new word that we're using to define something, it doesn't change that inherent thing.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. I know, exactly. And I think the cool thing about it is when she went over some of the strengths, right? Because some of the strengths I didn't even realize were actual strengths of mm-hmm. neurosparkly people, which mm-hmm. I love that term. I'm going to be using that all the time.
I know. It's perfect.
It's so great. But she talked about how they are usually highly creative. They focus a lot and they get a lot done. They're overtly honest, right? And energetic and can do a lot throughout a day. So those are all really cool. Even just thinking about the overtly honest part of it, mm-hmm. you know, it's like I've known people in my life that I believe would be on the spectrum or maybe neurosparkly. But of course, that never really was discussed or, you know, wasn't something that they identified as. So
mm-hmm.
but just looking back at some of the people I was in contact with in my past and just thinking like, yeah, they really were creative and they really were brutally honest with me at times yeah. where, you know, maybe I didn't want to hear what they had to say, but it was perfect because mm-hmm. it's exactly what I needed to hear at that yeah. moment, right?
And it's just so refreshing. Like, people think if somebody's brutally honest that takes them aback or maybe that's gauche or whatever. But it's like, it is only that way because of the weird passive-aggressive, beat-around-the-bush, like, talk,
yeah.
read-between-the-lines culture that we've created. And why?
Exactly. And this is where my neurosparkly feels like it kind of kicks in because mm-hmm. I'm not sure. At times I feel like I'm a little bit on the spectrum too in these ways, only because not that I'm like, I don't know, the codependent in me stops me from being super honest all the time because yeah. I'm trying to people please and stuff. But yeah. like a lot of the times when it comes to receiving messages, I need you to just flat out tell me the yeah. full and complete sentence.
Yes.
Like, have you ever met someone who just starts a sentence in the middle of it, and mm-hmm. you're like, wait, where's the subject and the predicate? Like, I don't, I can't make sense of this.
To whom and for why?
So for as far as like receiving goes, I am definitely, I guess, on the spectrum in this way where I'm like, I need to fully understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's subliminal messages mm-hmm. or, you just ways, passive aggressive ways of saying mm-hmm. things. I will not understand you. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm purposefully doing that. Mm-hmm. It's because I really don't get you.
But what's so crazy is like, if you're talking to a therapist and you're like, you're talking about assumptions and you're talking about passive aggressiveness and you're talking about, like family dynamics of ways that you always have been. And so you assume those roles without being asked and you understand what the other person needs without them blatantly saying it. It's like, they would all tell you that that is some sort of controlling codependent problem.
Yeah,
right?
True.
But that is exactly what we're talking about here is right. this weird culture of anticipating what the other person actually means by what they said. And not really, like, she uses a good example of if somebody asks you, did you have lunch yet? That means, do you want to go to lunch with me? So if you just say, yeah, then somebody might interpret that as, oh, well, fine. You don't want to go to lunch with me. And you're not even telling me why, or that you're sorry you can't go to lunch with me, or you're, you know.
Yeah.
They could take it personally. But it's like, but you just asked me if I had lunch. And I said, yes. You know.
Right.
Why can't you just say what you actually mean?
Exactly. And that I need people to be more literal with me sometimes, mm-hmm. honestly. Because I feel like the way I talk to people isn't. Like, I am pretty straightforward the mm-hmm. way I talk. So I kind of expect that in return. And when mm-hmm. I don't get that, I get really frustrated. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like my whole life is riddled with misunderstandings all around this sometimes. Because it's mm-hmm. like, I feel like everyone misunderstands me because mm-hmm. I didn't get that cue. I didn't mm-hmm. get that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like you just said, that was a really good point, which is, why are we all expecting to, like, do that, understand that thing for that person, or understand that, be that for that person? And it's like, that's just a neurotypical thing that we built into society. That's not even healthy.
No. And that's what's so common in all these practices people have in this culture, like religion or politics or anything, where when something happens for so many years and you have this built-in back storyline,
yeah.
but you're born after the storyline has invaded and infiltrated and bled into all of these different aspects of society, you're not looking at it from its origin. You're looking at it from its after it's been quilted into your life.
Yes.
So you look at it and you think, wow, that could never have been started. That just always was here. That's inherent. That's real. That's true. Because look at, it's everywhere.
Right.
And it's like, that's by design.
Right, right. You're you know? Born into that lens. That's kind
we
of
don't,
what you're saying.
Right? Yeah, we don't need to continue with this pattern of quilt.
Right.
We just are because it's been that way and it's easier and we have these colors and we know how to do this, you know.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And like, this is sort of the same thing, but like I had a friend who was telling me about like how her mom has not changed in some of the toxic ways that her mom's mom was.
Mm-hmm.
And like when confronted, the mom was just like, well, this is all I know. It's like, yeah, it's kind of like the quilt thing. It's like, yeah, that's all you know, so that's all you do, instead of like realizing there's a different way of looking at life and doing things type thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's kind of on the subject of what we're talking about.
Totally.
Side note.
100%. Yeah, let's be creative. Let's think about another way to be. And don't immediately assume if something makes you uncomfortable or is different that it's bad.
Right.
You know? I mean, I feel like that's so basic, but people do respond that way.
Right. Yeah.
And then it ends up, she was saying, making people who are neurosparkly feel lonely and spiral because people who are neurodivergent aren't they're not designed to thrive in the classic capitalist system necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So like she was saying, oftentimes people who are neurosparkly, 9 to 5 really doesn't work for them because they're on really high and then they're on a low, and being moderate all day every day is just not gonna work for them.
Yeah.
So that's similar in the sense where it's like, nobody understands me. I don't feel like I belong. I'm othered. People misunderstand me. People misunderstand my motives. I don't understand people. I'm trying so hard. No one's trying to understand me because I'm the other.
Right.
Right. And then I don't fit in the world in a way that helps me make friends, make money, be a part of things.
Right.
So how could you not feel lonely and spiraling?
Right. Right, exactly. And I laughed when she made that point, though, because that's like, I hate capitalism, too, and I hate my 9-to-5, too. But, yeah, I mean, I get where her point is different when it comes to that. I'm just saying, it's like, I can relate.
Yeah, you know? Like, seriously, though. I love that meme that's like a little bear in bed, and it's like, bed doesn't judge. Bed gets me.
So true. Love it. Yeah, and when it comes to the actual, like, finding the similarities with codependency, you know, it's like, with neurodivergence, they're more likely to be in a codependent, narcissistic, or abusive relationship, which I found was really interesting.
Yeah, totally. And she was saying, so what was she talking about right before that? She was like, oh, she was saying some people find their Penny from Big Bang Theory, where some people find the person who can see them for who they are and in a non-judgmental way gently explain some things to them about the world that they're not quite getting, translate the world for them, you know, give them options maybe on different ways to communicate, but that opens them up because they are relying on someone so much and the world is cruel, that opens them up to those relationships where people like a narcissist or a codependent or an abusive person, they latch onto people who need them. Yeah. So like those are the people who would maybe gravitate towards a person who's neurodivergent because they know they need them, right? And then in public, they're being the Penny, but then in private, they're being, she said, the person who tears down your self-esteem. But then, as we know, the frog in the pot thing, it happens, and you think, well, no, I guess, I mean, look at all these great things they do for me. I guess it wasn't that bad, right? And then it happens again, and it happens more, and then it happens more and worse, and then you think, what happened? How am I in this? You know? And that, so that makes sense that people who are neurodivergent might be at more risk to be in those relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. I understood it when she put it in that lens. And it reminds me of when we did the episode on narcissist or narcissism, where it's like codependents are drawn to them like a moth to a flame type thing.
Yeah.
It's very similar in this case where it's like, I get why neurodivergent people would also be attracted to the abusive person.
They both are attracted to each other for different reasons. And then she was also saying that neurodivergent people are more likely to be addicted to the narcissist because a negative event, a drama, will spike your dopamine just like a fun thing will.
Yeah.
So you're more likely to be addicted to that up and down, up and down. And then when you meet the nice guy, you feel bored because there's no spike.
Which is wild, right? Because it's like people can actually spike our dopamine in ways. The same way that we get excited about a notification on our phone is the exact same thing a abusive person could do to our brain and our psyche and our body. It's like, it's kind of wild when you actually think about that.
It's wild. And it also gives me hope because I'm like, this is the reason that I know we can trick our brains, because if that that's all that it is, then we can hone down the events and the feelings, right?
Right.
To that chemistry. And I don't really necessarily have to put so much weight in the feeling.
Yeah.
Right.
But do you think it's harder when you're in those kind of relationships and heavy feelings are involved on top of that? Like, I get what you're saying, but I also think it's, like, really hard in practice, right? Because
it's easy.
I was like, wait, what? I don't think we're saying the same thing. Megan, no, I think we're on the wrong page.
You and I are on two different wavelengths. No, it is so hard. And I think that's the thing about doing all this stuff and talking about all this stuff is because you have to practice it in a microcosm, right? That's like what therapy is. It's a microcosm of the real world, practicing these events and using opportunities and getting your hand held in small opportunities to practice these things. So when the big thing comes up, you have that tool in your tool belt.
Yeah. And where you're basically saying, like, when that pops up in your life, you can separate the dopamine, what's giving, what's spiking that right now versus...
Because, like, for example, if something comes up and your dopamine spikes and you think, oh, this is drama and this means I need to fix this and all the feelings that you're swept up in, right? It is easier for you to doubt yourself and to step out and be the observer of your thought rather than be be reacting to the thought if you've already practiced that. And you know, okay, I'm going to step back, be the observer of this thing. I understand I'm having this feeling and this connection with this person. But what's a lot of what's fueling this is chemistry, right?
Right.
In our body, it's biology and the chemistry of our brain function. So I can detach a little bit from that feeling and not let it run my actions.
I see.
You know?
I see. Yeah, it comes back to the art of detachment, which we've talked about as well. It's so freaking hard, but, like, it's true. And you shake your head no.
It's so hard.
It really is,
like,
hard.
Like, letting go, I was just talking to my boyfriend about this. We were talking about, like, holding things you love with an open hand so that they can come and they can go, because that really is what... Not
unclenching.
What love is, but unclench, Brooke. Like, I don't mean, like, that's what love is. I mean, like, that's what anything is in life. It's like, you don't have control over it. So no matter what it is, you have to have an open palm, and it will only hurt you if you try to clench it.
Yeah. I'm a big clencher.
I'm all about the clench.
I understand that for sure. I've always heard of that metaphor that you've talked about, or I don't know if that's a metaphor, right? Metaphor?
Yeah, I think,
Just like thinking about like a bird coming and landing on your hand and then like running away.
You're and not appreciating gonna... the beauty when it's there and loving it. And then when it flies away, appreciating that you had a second with it.
Right. And it reminds me of the reason, season, lifetime thing that I've talked to you about, which is like you're either in your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And I always think of that all the time, but then at times where I'm like, don't go. Don't leave me.
That one is hard for me, though, because you're like, there's always the lifetime option. And then I think, why aren't you the lifetime option? Wait, but we could have this option. Wait, but there could be possibly this. Yeah. I need to not have parameters or options. I need to just think, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you are just in my hand for this brief moment.
Well, I think it's meant for perspective afterwards.
No, I won't. I won't use it. No, you're right. Afterwards, it is very helpful.
Yeah. Because when they leave in your life and you're thinking, wow, I thought that was my lifetime, then you can kind of have perspective.
There are two other things that could possibly be.
Yeah.
No, that's true. I loved when she said, so she was talking about how neurodivergent people are often, what's the word? They're prone to sensory issues.
Yeah.
And I actually did my... my master's thesis on the sensory issues with autistic children and the relationship between speech therapy. Because oftentimes occupational therapy will work on sensory issues and we'll have them go do that. If it's really a barrier to participate in speech therapy, we'll have them do that first. If they can do both at the same time, we'll implement what they're working on with occupational therapy. And it's so nuts how... somebody's brain, you see it calm down and be able to focus and listen to you and pay attention and speak. And like, we just don't even think about it. And a lot of people with autism will say, like, the smallest thing, like the light in the room is buzzing and I can't not hear it, you know, and that's all I'm focusing on. And now we're having a meeting in this room where the light is buzzing louder than you're talking and I can't listen to you because the light's buzzing and nobody else is affected by that.
Yeah.
So they don't even think about it. And then it is considered othered. It's weird. It's whatever. And not, they don't consider, well, let's try to make everybody's sensory needs met.
Yeah.
You know, but it really affects how you can function in the world.
And just thinking about that, like, I'm weird with sensory things when I sleep, but I think that's a very normal thing for people. And I don't want to use normal, neurotypical way of being. I don't think anyone wants to hear any weird noises while they're sleeping or, you know, Actually, this is... Okay, hold on. Sorry, I'm right in the middle of a train thought, but I'm switching the train.
Mm-hmm.
The one sound I like when I'm sleeping is, like, the sound of a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe someone who's neurosparkly would be like, absolutely not, cannot do that sound.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine just during the day, not when you're sleeping, hearing the sounds of, like, the light in the room, like you had mentioned, or, like, mm-hmm. hearing those little things and not being able to get it out of your head. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine. That must be really difficult to deal with, you know?
And because as a kid, I had some sensory issues. And now as an adult, I have a couple loud sounds that make me scared. And that's the only feeling that I can equate it to. Like,
yeah.
It's not really a fearful scared, but my body reacts as though it's scared. Like, everywhere, like, the middle of my torso contracts and tenses. And I, like, kind of spasm a little bit. And, like, I cannot function for a second. My jaw tenses.
Yeah.
And I just, it takes over my functioning, you know.
For what sounds?
Well.
Should I do them right now?
Siren. Yeah. And bring them in. We actually.
I was setting you up this whole time.
This is an intervention.
Yeah.
It's, one of them's kind of funny. It's an airplane toilet. I can't hear it flush. It's too loud.
And really?
Yeah. I have to plug my ears. In fact, I plug my ears and I flush it with my foot so that my ears are covered the whole time.
No way.
I have to. I can't. Because I've tried to flush it and really quick put my hands up to my ears, but it's too late and it's just, it doesn't work. I have that same reaction. So I've developed a plan.
Does it have to do with the fact that you're in an airplane and you can get sucked in or something?
No.
I know it's dumb.
No, but it is that, like, vacuum sound.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
just so loud and pressured.
Yeah.
You know, because other regular toilet flushing, I don't like it. You know, it's like a mini, ugh, but
yeah.
it's fine. But, no, in the airplane, I can't do it. And then I have to, like, if I don't plug my ears, if I don't successfully plug my ears, I have to, like, stay in there and do a little breathing, like, like, everything's fine. I have to, like, calm my body down.
It is really loud.
It's like, so loud.
The airplane flushes are insanely loud.
I mean, yeah. I know why, but why? And then a siren, like a particularly loud siren. You know, some of them actually aren't that bad.
Yeah.
But a fire truck siren is really, it's too much.
Yeah. Have you gotten scared shitless before with, like, one just... pops up right behind you and it just like boom and starts going. I've had that happen a few times where I've almost shit my pants.
I'm like, know, that's insane. So shocking.
Yeah.
But she, go ahead.
No, there's times where you can see them approaching and yes. it's like, that's fine. There are times where they sneak the fuck up on you. Like,
did you wait to turn that on until you were literally a foot behind me? I know. And she said she didn't even know that she had a sensory thing, particularly with socks. Remember that?
Yes.
And she was like, somebody was like, do you have a sock sensory thing? And she goes, no. And the person who was also neurodivergent said, okay, tell me about socks. And she said, okay, well, I can only wear this kind of sock. It has to be this material. And if it's rolled up past my ankle, I have to roll it down a little bit on the top. And she stopped and went, oh, wait, I do have a thing about socks. And I said, do you think you didn't notice that? Because, like, tests that you take
mm-hmm.
to see if you have those type of sensory issues or autism or ADHD, whatever, are written by neurotypical people. So,
yeah.
for example, her example right there, one question, she just said no. The other right. question, she realized she did have a thing about socks. So
right.
it's not asked in a way, I think, that makes them open up and realize what they really are supposed to be realizing for the sake of the test.
Yeah, which is really interesting because it's like that one question about socks opens up a whole can of worms.
Yeah, I know. Her answer was so long. I loved that. That was so funny.
Yeah, but no, I got what she's saying. It's like, yeah, just very specific about certain things like that. Or mm-hmm. very, what is it? Not specific, but I don't know, what's the word? Just...
specific.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
You need a specific thing to feel comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have anything besides the sirens, or is there anything that you're, like, maybe socks or anything that you have to be particular about?
I don't like things on my hands.
Okay.
So, like, I always wipe them if, like, I've touched anything. Like, I eat a croissant even. It's, like, not, it's not oily. Nothing is on my hands. Yeah. I still have to wipe them. I'm like, something is on there.
Same way. I am the exact same way. I can't talk today. Whoa. Okay, reminds me of the TikTok where that guy, he's, like, cooking and he's touching a bunch of things, but he, like, runs his hand under the yeah, faucet every
time. I do that exact thing. I started wearing gloves when I cook because I was like, I can't. I can't touch this stuff.
And then I feel wasteful because sometimes I'll be washing my hands so much and I'll use paper towels a bunch. And then I get mad at myself for wasting stuff. But I'm like, I can't. My hands are broke. My hands are messed up.
I know, exactly. Oh, and wow. I loved the point she made at the end about when we said any advice for parents to kids who are neurodivergent sparkly. And she said that her mom would always say, all you gotta do is love your kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome. And it reminds me of Love on the Spectrum. Did you watch that?
No, but I've heard about it a lot from people.
I told you to watch
that. I think I've watched the show.
I thought I mentioned that you should watch that. So there's this one kid on there who... his mom was really honest, and I thought it was beautiful that she was so vulnerable on the show. And she said, you know, when he was a kid and we learned that he has autism, I, you know, wanted him to have the best of the best in all the therapies and work on all the things. And she said it just became, obviously from good intention, but she then later, years later, realized, you know what, I am trying to fix him so much. Mm-hmm. That I'm losing a relationship with him and I'm not allowing him to just be.
Right.
And she said, when I switched that mindset and I just loved him, he flourished and he got a job and he started being social and he got, you know, all that stuff. It's like, just love the person they are and want a relationship with who that person is.
And it sounds so simple, but yet we always want to be fixing. It's like it's almost like a human nature thing where it's like fix. And if you're not quote unquote normal, I need to get you.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of, I mean, in the parents' defense, I think it's really hard too when they see their kid have moments of not fitting in with the other kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming out of a pure place where it's like, I just want you to have a full and happy life. Yep. But it's like, when you remove that and just show the kid that you truly just love them unconditionally and actually embrace all of the ways that they are, that just goes so much farther, right? Yeah.
It's a balance, like everything in life. We always talk about that. It's always a balance. But it's a balance of getting them help, finding strategies that work for them, but not coming from a place of trying to fix and make them something different.
Right. And they're badass, man. Like, neurosparkly kids and neurosparkly people.
Mm-hmm.
Like Joe had mentioned, there's so many positive things. They're going to go on to be business owners, man. Yeah. Like, let them do their thing.
She said they're tech. They're in tech a lot. Yeah. They're creatives, you know. They're in adult sports, she said.
Often, yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
They have really interesting ways of looking at life, and I think we need a different perspective every once in a while. I mean, the neurotypical way is kind of boring, to be honest. So
absolutely. I think you're boring. I'm just kidding.
That's skipping a beat.
Oh my gosh. Well,
feelings mutual.
And now that we've broken up our friendship, we just have one more question for you.
Do you like us?
Bye. Bye.